Joe, how are you doing?
Just perfect, Tim. And how are you this fine evening?
Very well. I have no complaints. At least I wouldn't bore you with any. So,
oh, for heaven's sakes, we could make the whole show about these things. You know, would bore no one.
So, yeah, the new job's a hassle and kids are the flu, as that song used to say. Cats in the cradle.
Yeah.
Okay, so tonight, I thought I mentioned it earlier this week or late last week, maybe tonight would be a good time to talk about the trouble with normies. How do we cope? How do we deal with normal people, as you know, in quotes, and their view of the world? They read the New York Times, the Washington Post, they watch CNN, Fox News, and they, you know, they've listened to their college professors, they've read their high school textbooks, and they think that's history. It's a closed book, and they can move on in the world, and everything generally works. You know, the courts are there to protect your rights, protect property, uphold law and justice. The jails are there to jail bad guys, and the cops are there to protect your rights. And there's really nothing to worry about because the adults are in charge, and there's nothing for us to do except pay our taxes and be good subjects. So that's maybe unfair to normies, but so how do we deal with normies? We know and love them because they're our family members, they're our friends. So how do we deal with normies? What's the trouble with them?
Well, you know, there's just almost no specific point to start with this, but it's a problem that everyone has, I think, who has a more developed understanding of our world. Right. To me, that kind of started with 9-1-1. You know, I went through the process of trying to figure out how the buildings could collapse without controlled demolition. Spent a lot of time doing that. And at the end of it, I was horrified because it was clear that it wasn't just, a group that had done all this that was basically an inside job, but that the media, the entire media, was an inside job. And so that led me to realize that the media was part of the society, the secret society that had done this. And in fact, I started to think about, you know, lifetime actors, people like Noam Chomsky and Lyndon Baines Johnson and the Bush family, that they had basically created these fictitious personalities, you know, to use for propaganda purposes. So it was really horrifying, you know, because it changed completely my understanding of reality. Fortunately, there were quite a few people that were going through the very same process at the very same time. So I was lucky in that I had a few friends who were coming to the same conclusions. However, we noticed that not many people at that time, you know, were kind of in our thought world. At that point, it wasn't too tough, you know. I mean, I had this sort of different understanding, but it wasn't really kind of getting to me emotionally. But as the years went along, and I kind of, couldn't really make much progress with family members, with a whole bunch of people that I knew, and I was, getting more and more sort of interested in internet relationships with people that actually could kind of think of what, as I saw it clearly. So I just started transitioning kind of just in terms of who I was dealing with. But the problem is, Tim, is that I was not really learning how to deal with normies, right? I was just kind of staying away from normies. But that's not a great way to live. And so I have, you know, thought about this over the last few years specifically. And, you know, basically, the thing that I do is I kind of categorize people basically into three camps. You know, I hate to be derogatory, but the first camp is just brain dead. You know, this would be you come into a party and one guy is talking about, you know, the Cleveland brain concussions are going to play a game Sunday against the Philadelphia Flying Fornicators, you know, and they then talk about, Hillary versus Trump. They think this is real. And, they have emotion about it, you know. They want to kill all the terrorists, and they don't want ISIS to get into the United States. They think that college is still a good idea. This group is like, basically, it's like I just say, look, why doesn't someone open a cylinder of glyphosate beer? We can just get sick. There's just nothing you can do. That's now, you know, they are just lost in the construction of reality. They're just nothing you can do to penetrate it. The other group is ones that I think are now troubled. It's sort of what I call the troubled group. It's a group that there's from time to time, they just don't quite get reality.
Is this like cognitive dissonance there?
Yeah, it's starting to creep in. Now, like, I'll just give you an example. Like, a good friend of mine from high school visited the other day, hadn't seen her in a long time. She runs a clinic, or actually a hospital, and she was talking about how she ran a vaccine clinic. And I said, well, I asked her, I said, well, did you know that, that the vaccine companies have been spared from lawsuits? She couldn't believe this. You know, even though she actually is a big shot in the hospital and she was running it, she was just shocked. But amazingly, she actually got back to me and she was like, well, this is weird. And she started having these other things. So she had moved into what I call this phase of the curious. Now, this is like because, you know, the people that kind of know me, just like I'm sure this happens to you, is like, a lot of people sort of, because I'm not particularly shy about my political positions. I think it's important, you know, to talk about stuff. So from time to time, I'll be at parties, and normally I'll be all by myself in a corner, you know, completely ostracized. But someone will come up and they'll go, you're like one of those truther guys, you know? And I go, yeah, that's me. That would be me. And they go, well, you know, it's like I've always thought that was a little weird. That whole thing was a little weird. It's the curious phase.
Yeah, yeah.
This is someone who's like, you can see the brain is actually turning over and there's something still living inside the mind. Now here, in terms of how do you get along with it, at this point, I just completely try to engage them. I try to, you know, every little fan, every little flame of curiosity about everything. It's like, one guy that I talked to, it started out with, he thought that the groping at the airports was irrational and there might be something in back of it, like the government, could be trying to basically shape us into slaves. This was just a little concern he had a couple of years ago. Tim, I'm proud to report that today the guy is a flaming opposite. I mean, he has gotten into every, he studies every conspiracy theory. I mean, he's so off the deep end, he listens to our show.
Oh, wow. Okay, wow.
So
is he living under an underpass now? Or?
Yeah, he is, actually. So his whole life has collapsed, and, you know, the kids have left. I mean, there's nothing left, but his mind is clear, you know. So this is good. But I just wanted to say that
he has nothing left but his sanity. Like that.
That's right. You have nothing left but your sanity, you know, and your will to resist, you know. And so, just on a serious side here, I would just say that in dealing with normies, you have to kind of look at yourself honestly, because some people. And I've seen this where they get ostracized and attacked and they just, for whatever reason, their particular psychological makeup, you know, just is beaten down by that. Even if they win every argument and have the truth, it just wears on them. Mm-hmm. I would say for people like that, they're better just to look for those who are curious and try to work, you know, at that, you know, at that level.
Yeah.
Others like who are leather skinned kind of, you know, troglodytes like myself. I mean, we have more of the responsibility to just, you know, let people vent hatred and confusion. You know, it's like people talking to me about ISIS. I just can't take this stuff seriously. And you know, and I'll say, you know, you're living in like a slave camp of your own making. You're completely like mind controlled robot. You know, I mean, I don't mince words, you know, to see if I can stimulate their, you know, kind of get some emotion out. But so anyway, it's just sort of like dealing with normies. It kind of depends on yourself. I don't think it's healthy. I don't think almost anybody who comes to the understanding that the secret society exists, that it's, you know, interested in genocide, that it's creating a brave new world of intentionally dumbed down humans, you know, mm-hmm. autism being a phenomenon. You know, I don't think you can't really live normally. You can't have a healthy life, you know, if you don't basically express this to the people that are around you. So it's a troubled area, Tim. It just, you know, you go out into this world with this information. If you're living among normies, not easy, because you will, you know, depending on your personality, you're not going to find a lot of happiness in communicating with them. You either got to shut up or, you know, prepare to have irrationality vent itself back to you. But you know something, Tim? This is what I just wanted to say, that we have to accept this and we have to do it. We have to turn our personalities basically into weapons of justice and truth. There's an expression. Mm-hmm. We have to accept the role. And it's just part of the responsibility that we have once we have the clarity of what is going on in our world. Those who have been given the gift and curse of the truth, it is upon them, you know, to give it to other people. And I hate to say it, but there's just no price too great, because they are basically genociding us. The Georgia Guidestones are not some kind of eccentric, you know, like a stoneworker that just happened to go out there and know how to speak ancient Babylonian in text. I mean, this is the future, folks. So we have to basically engage the normies. We have to try to move them from the brain dead, from where they're paying attention between the, you know, NFL, the, you know, and stuff like that, to try to make them engage with some curiosity about our world.
Yeah. That's the experience I have, whether it's with family members, more family members, is they're very stuck in the conventional view. I don't, you know, you call it a matrix. It's kind of...
Tim, I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm just curious. Do you have any family members that you can, like, that are, you know, to some extent clear-minded in seeing some of this stuff?
Perhaps one. Yeah. Perhaps one. And I don't necessarily agree with him all the time on some of the things, but it's as if when we talk about some things, and whether it's revision, certain skeptical or revisionist views of history, I often get a very emotional response, not an informed response. That's one thing that's almost like the emotion. You can gauge the emotion along with the lack of of knowledge or information about a particular topic. I gather that's an emotional reaction to the realization that their world is not what they think it is, and that's a very painful thing to acknowledge. Also, I think fear of ostracism, of their career. They're very comfortable in their place in the world, and they have certain material creature comforts, and the system seems to be feeding them well, and they don't like it being upset. So they like, you know, to think that the world is as they have been instructed. It basically works for them. You know, they person will choose a position on the left or on the right in the center, and that's their position. That's they don't like being moved from that from that position. They have their you know their heroes and their icons, and their villains. People actually react harsher to being denied their villains than they do their heroes.
Right. Yeah. That's true.
That's one thing I've learned. And they're not really given to any informed or rational discussion about these things. I mean, for me, at the very least, it's interesting. History is much more interesting than we've been led to believe, we've been told. So my curiosity is sparked by it, about certain things. And a lot of people think that they can sit back, watch the mainstream media, whether it's Fox News or CNN or MSNBC or the networks, read their newspapers and the magazines and listen to talk radio. And these corporate institutions are going to take this complex world and distill it down for us in a way that we can understand and make an informed decision about our lives, our children's lives, our careers. And that's not the way the system works. That's not the way it's never designed to work. And if you just do a cursory examine of the history of these institutions, these institutions were all corporate bodies that serve the very narrow interest of a few elite families. And that should be enough to, at least for the average person to go, whoa, wait a second, you know. And then I mean the university system, the whole doctorate program, PhD program, the getting your bachelor's degree, these markers for success are all designed to enslave us and mislead us so we don't acknowledge our enslavement and create a certain well, I'll call it mind control, if you will, but just an environment where we can no longer discern and judge things for ourselves because we're all working within the system. So when you start addressing things like 9/11, and that, for me, it didn't start with 9/11. To me, I was always interested in things like what was really going on in World War II and Pearl Harbor. So I was dealing more in history about 15 years ago. The JFK assassination and these things, World War II, Pearl Harbor, Gulf of Tonkin, Vietnam War, the true stories behind Watergate. And so as I was looking into all these events and how the mainstream view was not what we were told, I started looking more into 9/11. So if those things were, the media was involved in covering up those things, why should we look in the trust what they're telling us about 9/11? And then, of course, I was confronted with the obvious, you know, the anomalies and inconsistencies of the official story. And from then you have to deal with the implications of that. And that's what most people aren't willing to deal with, the implications of the problems with 9/11. You know, whether it's the, you know, collapse, you know, the free fall collapse, symmetrical collapse of buildings that are asymmetrically damaged. They look to be disintegrating, and you have this pyroclastic explosion. These things are all anomalies. It's Building 7.
Buildings melting
into the side of a building. Yeah.
You know, hitting the Pentagon with a like commercial jetliner at 500 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And then no debris. I mean, that was like, that's the slickest piece of flying I've ever seen.
Now, I don't necessarily immediately condemn people for not acknowledging that, because for a few years I didn't think about it either. I was traumatized by the events that day. I was overwhelmed by it, and the whole thing was designed to overwhelm your senses, so you lose your critical facts. That's the essence of terrorism. But nevertheless, as the years, you know, as you calm down, you regain your rational faculties, your critical thought, and you start taking in what's going on. You know, something's not right here, and you start taking the time to read books. And within 5, 6, 7 years, my position had wouldn't say solidified, because I don't think they don't solidify in any of these things. I'm always willing to adjust them according to the facts. But that's when I sort of really became convinced that, it was, for the lack of a better term, an inside job. Much more complex, I think, than even many of the researchers, 9/11 truth researchers, even realize, which leads all the infighting within the community, because everyone has their own little theories about what really happened. And, you know, and I think, like anything, people have equated 9/11, also JFK, these things to an onion, because there's layers to these things, and there's different factions and interests involved in these things. And differing theories regarding the events that day, what happened, don't necessarily contradict each other. You know?
Right, and it's sad, actually, that you know, people get fixated on small theories or particular theories, and then they will end up fighting among themselves. You know, you get like mm-hmm. the Judy Wood camp with, yeah. you know, versus, you know, I don't know,
Jim
Thermite, you know, the different theories on yeah. how it came down. I mean, all that's interesting, but it keeps us from the one thing that we have to develop. The one thing that I always try to bear in mind whenever I'm talking to a normie that it seems to be transitioning through the phases is that really at the end of the day, what you're trying to end up with, to use an expression, is brotherhood or unity, because a lot of the people are not brothers, so women. But you need to have a an established group that identifies with itself. In other words, if you think about an ethnic neighborhood, okay, what that is, that's kind of what we have to recreate, but around the awareness that there is a, you know, a Luciferian secret society that wants to genocide us. And it controls the media, it controls the government and the wealth, and it controls, it uses lifetime actors and sophisticated psychological maneuvers against the people. And so once you have that awareness, just being by yourself or having it as kind of an analytic puzzle, that doesn't really help anything. You need to find a way to create brotherhood. And so that's why one thing I try to do is to suggest to people that, you know, in the alt media, we should only be fighting among ourselves if there is something that's life and death. Because all of the infighting and kind of along the alt media lines is basically counterproductive to the major goal, which is brotherhood. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example, like Jay Dyer. Jay didn't like the fact that I was writing analysis about the Tempest, I think it was. Yeah, the Tempest. And so he was writing kind of bad things that I was plagiarizing him, even though, in fact, if he had bothered to read it, he would have seen, you know, that what I was talking about is just totally different than what he was talking about. And so then, you know, in other shows, there's been like issues, you know, like our positions on Christianity is different, a few things. And I ran into him. We're both doing a media thing in Denver at this network. And so he was there and I was there. And I told him, I said, Jay, look, let's not sweat the small stuff. Let's try to develop some protocols so that the emerging brotherhood cannot be sidetracked by these small things.
Yeah, yeah.
If all you have, I'm sorry.
I was just saying, yeah, just agreeing with him. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, if all you end up with is just like 1,000 little fiefdoms of analysis, right, where everyone has a small little pet theory about whatever, and it's put forward, and they have a few followers. I mean, what is that going to do? We need to find a way to transition all this sort of understanding into a unity. Into, I don't know, maybe we need to get like t-shirts made or something so that we can be like, you know, instead of Antifada, we can be, you know, I don't know, Tim Kelly Fada or something, you know, some kind of way of like representing ourselves, that there is this overarching problem about the Luciferian secret society that is going to genocide us, right? And all the little pet theories, you know, is it thermite or is it controlled demolition or is it, you know, some kind of special nuclear? Okay, that's all interesting. But, folks, it's not relevant to the big problem. Mm-hmm. In fact, if we bog down there, how are we going to develop the one thing that we need, which is this vast unity? So my thing, Tim, is when we talk to normies, is try to not get them to be, you know, fired up on any one particular, you know, theory, but rather look for themes that can get them into our guild, our community. And so, you know, everyone, you can't always control how conversations unfold, but I would say, you know, things that I would mention are like all of the false flags in history. You know, the things that'll just, if you get to try to transition someone from curious into, you know, like a real understanding of the world, one of the good things is just all of the false flags in history. Right.
Yeah, that's what I do. I just laying out.
Yeah, what do you do, Tim? I'm just curious about that. Like, if you find someone who's curious, do you have a particular way of transitioning them?
Well, I usually, someone who is dismissive or trying to mock me is a conspiracy theorist. I use that term. I said, do you know where that term came from? That itself was a conspiracy. I mentioned the CIA memorandum of 1967 is used to marginalize those who are skeptical of the Warren Report regarding the John F. Kennedy assassination. So you're mimicking you're parroting the very line that they created to smother skepticism, which is necessary in any free society, especially when you're dealing with institutions, particularly secretive occulted institutions like the Central Intelligence Agency and the military, which have no effective oversight. So I point that out, and then I say a history of if you dismiss the idea of false flag terrorism, you're simply dismissing history. Then I mentioned, you know, the Levant affair, the Israeli attempt, the USS Liberty, which they don't seem to know about. You know, then I tell them about it. I said, look it up. Look it up. Explain this to me. Explain Northwards, Operation Northwards, that was revealed because of the Kennedy assassination, because it was the documents that were released in the in the wake of Oliver Stone's movie, when they passed the records review board, which then released these records, and this document was released showing that the Joint Chiefs of Staff had proposed to President Kennedy in 1962 a false flag attack that involved fake victims, fake airlines, drones, and these things. And this is 1962. This is history. Now, this is the official narrative. Now, why it was released, it could be limited hangout, more PSYOP. Could have been just an accident. It just got out. That I don't know. But nevertheless, the official story is that this is what they were planning. Lyman Lemitzer, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, was doing that, and he was sent packing, went out to head NATO just when Gladio kicked in. Operation Gladio is another documented false flag attack, Gladio operations. These false flag terror attacks, for years we were worried about, you know, terrorism, red terror in Europe. It was the communists and all that. That's what we thought it was in the 70s and 80s. All of a sudden, the 90s it came out, it was all fake. It was there to create that terror, that anxiety that we were feeling in the 70s to fundamentally change the politics of the target nations, Italy, Belgium. You had the Brabant massacres where you had just these random shootings in shopping malls in Belgium. You know, and it turns out this is part of that Gladio operation. So when you look at that, and you look at the shooting craze that just, you know, a year or two ago we were going through, you start to rethink these, whether it's Sandy Hook or these lone shooter attacks and all these things. Makes you rethink about, you know, Oklahoma City and the history behind that, and of course the whole idea of COINTELPRO and radicalizing, infiltrating, and actually creating terror groups like the Assembly's Liberation Army. It was an outgrowth out of MK Ultra, the Vacaville prison, and how the intelligence agencies and military more or less took over the psychiatric hospitals and prisons of the United States, as using these people as guinea pigs to create false terror, to create a political climate where they could further expand the police state, expand budgets, and create fear in society. So if you look at that, then that puts 9/11, that puts all these shooting events, all these events in a different context. If you look at Operation Chaos and idea that, you know, the military through the National Guard has pretty much erased Posse Comitatus, and they've all the various different alphabet soup operations out there going, which we don't even know about, that are infiltrating these supposed white extremist groups. And if there's a neo-Nazi group out there, if there's a Klan meeting out there, most of them are informants or federal agents, and they're there to stir up trouble. If you look at like PATCON, Patriot Conspiracy, the FBI program, wasn't there just to infiltrate these groups that existed on their own. It was there to either take groups that existed on their own, radicalize them, run them as an operation to justify budgets under the cover of an investigation. And it's very likely factored into what happened in Oklahoma City on April 1995. And you can extrapolate from that. You can extrapolate like the case of Whitey Bulger, what the FBI was doing, where they were protecting this mobster. He was going out killing, stealing, and these FBI agents were building a career off him as he went out. And they even put an innocent man in prison because they didn't want to blow their informant. And so extrapolate from that. What do you think is really going on? You have Trevor Arrison's book, The Terror Factory, where all these terrorist cases that we've heard about since 2001, the domestic terrorist cases, they're all FBI run operations, the sting operations. These are terrorist conspiracies that wouldn't exist if not for the FBI nurturing them. And you know, it's easy to take credit for an arrest if you hatch the plot. You know, so it changes your analytical approach to these things. You know, you have to have the knowledge, so your analytical approach to what's going on is better informed. You know, and that's what you have to point out. And usually, if the conversation goes that long, the person will be overwhelmed by it. You know, or they just really, it's like I'm from another planet. Even though when I'm speaking, all those examples are all documents. Those aren't the craziest conspiracy theories, to put that in quotes. Those are the documented things, you know. So
right,
if those things are true, you bet the reality is much worse. The truth is much worse, you know.
Yeah, those are the ones they've been caught at.
Yeah.
Who knows what they haven't been caught at. I always try to throw in Ewan Cameron. I think he's someone that really helps normies kind of transition, almost as no one has ever heard of him. But, you know, like there's just a lot of stuff online now about the torture that he put his victims through. And the funding of those experiments, you know, through MKUltra is completely documented. It's something any citizen can process. And when you then think about, for example, 9-1-1 in light of the other human experimentations, and basically, let's just call it what it is, human sacrifice, then suddenly the mind is a little more open to the possibility that 9-1-1 was an inside job, right? Because when you document all of these instances where there was the deaths of civilians, well, it just makes the idea that the government would do something like 9-1-1 more basically processable to the normal mind, particularly when you link it into the politics, when you link it into the Patriot Act being all set to go the next 2 days later, when you link it into the foreign policy that was all set to go the next day. The political linkage of 9-1-1 is well established. Anyone can see it. It's completely artificial. Right. Wesley Clark supposedly wandered around the Pentagon the day after 9-1-1, and they were telling him that they were going to invade Iraq, even though there was no connection between Iraq and the event. They said that's what they were going to do. And so the political linkage to 9-1-1 was basically something that was already in place. And then all you need to do is then show that 9-1-1, because of all of the strange things that came about and the documentation, was something the government did. And then now that's a nice unified whole that a normie can basically kind of scratch his head about. And then hopefully they can start to move forward. One thing that I was going to mention, little data point that I came across that kind of raised an eyebrow. So I was looking at data about opioid use and came across this fact that half of the adult males that are not in the workforce, one half, use opioids. One half, right? And this is an enormous fraction. It isn't like, you know, 3% population. Those are the official number. You're talking about like 30% of the adult males. And of this group, one half use opioids. So that would be what I would put in an opioid user would be someone I would put in the class of really you can't do a whole lot with this individual, right? Because you have this strong chemical control. They can't get upset about anything, right?
Yeah.
So one thing that we really want to also go with, and this is actually, I mean, I was going to suggest to you that this has been a route that I've had some success with, is I try to get them to think about they want, you know, they're not healthy, you know, like, well, you know, you weigh 300 pounds, you know, you have cancer and, you know, you have high blood pressure, and they have this like bucket full of medicine they want you to take that makes you feel like, you know, you're brain dead. And so maybe you want to like look in another path here, brother. Maybe you want to like talk about some nutrition. And once they start to transition, and my point is just that it's easier conceptually to start to realize they have to change their way of eating and nutrition and just, you know, toxicity. And from there, they can start to see that there's malevolence. It's just an easier platform to see the reality of malevolence. Because once people get into like studying autism, studying, you know, the toxicity in foods, it's a pretty easy trajectory to get to the understanding that there's malevolence. And if someone starts to see malevolence in our government, then I think the curtain is lifting, right? That's someone who will be open to other ideas about government malevolence. And this is the key kind of thing you have to look for and look for opportunities, teaching moments where someone has a reason to want to be open-minded. And, you know, someone who is, you know, on opioids, many people basically just their soul is crushed under that condition. And they just, there's nothing you can do with them. But some people feel horrible. There are some people whose soul is not crushed, who know that they're on a path that they shouldn't be on. Those people, I think, are open, I think, to the idea of government malevolence a little bit, you know, more so than normal people. The problem is they have to overcome the hurdle of getting off the opioids. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, so you have this additional issue. But that's another thing that I look for is people that want to transition in terms of health.
Yeah, the acknowledgement of malevolence and high-level malevolence is a key thing, because often people are incredulous when you suggest that entire institutions are corrupted and actually are looking to kill you slower or faster. The medical system, these men in white coats and the allopathic medicine system that was imposed by the Rockefellers back in the early 20th century, that's another area. We just go through the history. You can see, you can almost see a business plan unfolding. You know, they want to market these petroleum-based chemicals, drugs, and get away from homeopathic, natural care, nutrition, and start to impose sick care. And if you get example, John D. Rockefeller's father, Wired, I think it was Devil Bill, they called him. He actually was a snake oil salesman. You know.
Yeah, that's right.
And he killed people with this thing, Nujol. And when Nujol was supposed to cure cancer, then they realized it couldn't do that. They called it a laxative. The only problem is, you expelled all the necessary nutrients you're supposed to be absorbing in your body, making you sicker. A good example of malevolence of the medical system was in the 1920s, I think, was it the 20s or early part of the 20th century, pellagra in the South, this vitamin deficiency, I think it was niacin because of the diet down there, the poor people in the South. They discovered that this condition, pellagra, was a vitamin deficiency. And so if you just included niacin, increased niacin in the diet, you'd get rid of it. They covered it up for more than two decades. And this was part of, I think, the Harriman family did this. And through Cold Harbor Springs, this eugenics institution up in New York. But they more or less instructed the medical community not to make implement that, you know, incorporate that information into their medical care to cure these people. They wanted to see them get sicker. You also, you know, the infamous Tuskegee program, institute, where they let these black men die of syphilis, spread syphilis, and these things just to see the reaction. And I don't think that type of malevolence is just targeting the black population. So, I mean,
they target everyone, but yeah. I mean, that isn't in their ethnicity or guild. But the problem is that they do look at the African American as the most vulnerable.
Yes, and they've been
crap against them. And, I mean, that's why they first brought out the concept of the single mom funded by the state as a culturally wholesome entity with the African American populations.
Yeah, more or less. One thing is to destroy them, to reduce their numbers, and also to create sort of a lumpen proletariat. Is what we have.
Exactly. That is what they're after. They're after, but it's not just lumpen. I mean, it's like more, I would say that's transition. Where they want to get to is deltas and epsilons.
Yeah.
I mean, when we were talking about autistic kids and how they are, you know, they're trying to rework the cultural memory by, you know, making it a neurologic right.
Yeah, neurodiversity.
Neurodiversity, and they have the neurologic right to exist as autistic people in a happy, healthy way, and we should be accepting of them.
And they could be superheroes, like in the movie The Accountant with Ben Affleck. You know, it's a
Yeah. So, you know, so this is obvious just malevolence on a grand scale. They're just trying to make people think that the, you know, the brave new world, intellectually stratified society is good. And of course, their children are being given every imaginable, you know, way to have the highest possible amount of brain power. So, you know, you can see where they want to take us. And this would just be a transition in itself before we were replaced by robots. And then you'd have the Georgia Guidestones come to life. So, this is why you have with health, you know, a really good opportunity to get clarity. One group, and I know this is, you know, double-edged because there's so much emotion involved, but one group I've had a lot of success with getting people to transition is mothers who have children and are a little bit leery about vaccination.
Yeah, because their maternal instinct is kicking in. It just doesn't seem right.
Doesn't seem right, yeah. You know, they get the babies taken away, all these, you know, and they know, you know, so that is another way, another opportunity to try to transition normies. Because, you know, getting back to like our topic, I mean, to me, the existential problem of like living with normies, you know, I don't mind just being alone in a party, Tim. I could care less, frankly, you know, the conversation is better. Because the normies just drive me nuts.
I like it when they ask me a question and they don't let me answer it.
Well, I'm just regarded as so bad tempered and weird that I'm just brought as something that is a cautionary tale for normal people to look at. You know, but it doesn't really. It's fine because the conversations, the superficiality, and the way you have to avoid, you know, being yourself. It drains my energy. I'd rather just have fewer conversations with people that are higher quality than a whole bunch of conversations with people that are, you know, basically normies. It's just exhausting to try to transition them even to simple things like, you know, being a little more alert about 911, or maybe you want to look at maybe there's a chance that the government would be tempted to be malevolent with the power of the vaccines. You know, just little things like that are so much effort when someone's not willing to transition, that it's just not worth my time. But so I don't really ever feel like, oh, this is horrible. If only I could talk to normies. You know, I just don't, that doesn't cross my mind. But when someone is curious, then that is energizing to me. And it makes up for all of the lost small talk and you know, one thing about the normies just in general, and this is just a comment on American culture, it's complete crap. I mean, you know, it's like they talk about the NFL and fantasy football and opioids. And I mean, it's just complete crap. They have nothing on their minds are just shot. You know, they don't have any kind of curiosity about anything, really. They're kind of brain dead. So you really don't want to spend much time with them. It's just if there is a, you know, some individual that kind of wants to unify with you, then that's very energizing. But the rest of the time, I think it's just best to, but you know, you have to be on the lookout. The group that I would love to, like, you know, have discussions with how to like engage with normies is college kids, because in college there should be intellectual curiosity, even though there isn't. And even though, you know, the universities are basically slave camps, but the kids are at their peak in terms of like mental power and energy, you know, and because they have the social networks, I think there's a lot of basically, you know, kind of 911 sort of thinking. It goes on in campuses. There's still some intimidation. I was talking to someone the other day, and he was saying, yeah, there's a lot of us that think about it, but we don't really have a venue to come out, you know, and the professors would be on our case and stuff. So you have the mind control stuff. But, you know, so that's the thing, is that don't really worry too much about what you're missing if you can't communicate or feel, you know, at one with normies. There's nothing that you're missing. But the part where it's sad, Tim, is when it's family members. And I have, you know, a large family, and I really can't talk seriously to any of them, my brothers and sisters, because they just are very happy and very successful inside the normie world. And so that's just where they stay.
Yeah, that's the in their middle class, upper middle class bubble. And
yeah,
I'm in a similar, when it comes to politics. I don't waste much time in a conversation anymore, because their worldview is just it's inside that bubble. You know, it's right versus left.
It's completely insane.
Democrat.
I mean, yeah, the people that are like thinking that Trump and Hillary, this is real democracy. I mean, it's just, what can you do? It's just, you scratch your head and you just go, no, it's just, these are puppets and you're being manipulated. But they hate Hillary, or they hate the Trump. And I mean, one of my family members gave me an email saying that basically that God was punishing Trump by sending the hurricane to hit Mar-a-Lago, his fancy house in Florida. You know, it's like, and she was happy about that because doesn't like the Donald. And so, okay, well, what are you going to do? You know, it's like there's no point to engage with in terms of, you know, you really want to get past thinking of Trump as someone who is, a real character, real personality, and someone who's representing something. You know, he's actually there to confuse people and to, you know. But you know, so there it is. It's like the family thing is the one point I think that's hard. But everything else, you know, I think you're much better. You feel a lot better. Your mind functions better to just not engage in. Constant superficial normie conversations. I don't think this is, you know, wasn't good for me anyway. It didn't work for me, and I was happy to be rid of it.
Yeah. I had older family member kind of goad me on 9/11, and my response is that you still think President John F. Kennedy was killed by a low nut named Harvey Oswald. And if you don't understand that, the problems with that official story, there's no way I can explain to you 9/11.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to get past that first. And Pearl Harbor, he still talks World War II in conventional terms. And how do you talk about World War II in conventional terms and deal with the fact that, you know, all the evidence now, the overwhelming evidence shows that Pearl Harbor was a setup? And that type of malevolence, the willingness of military and political leaders to sacrifice 2,000 men for some sort of geopolitical objective. Well, that's the same thing as 9/11. It's the same thing as Vietnam, the Gulf of Tonkin, and the role that heroin played in that, and just military contracts, the profiteering and all that. And that should factor in during your analysis of those events. It wasn't fighting communism, or the fact that in the 1980s, tons and tons of cocaine was imported by the Reagan administration's National Security Council, led by George Bush, who became president, who was former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, who doesn't know where he was when John F. Kennedy was assassinated, supposedly.
These are things
that you have to factor in your understanding of events. I remember I mentioned, I think, this to you off call a week or two ago, about I was at a barbecue and we were talking about this Central Intelligence Agency, and just in general, and I was not a family member, but an in-law of my brother, an older man who's started kind of trying to needle me, being very condescending in his own way, and talking about, don't we need intelligence? And we need a Central Intelligence Agency? Are you saying we don't need this? And I said, are you even familiar with the origins of the Central Intelligence Agency, of who created it and the interest that went into its creation? It's all banking and Wall Street. You're protecting their interests.
Right.
The corporations
exactly.
That you work for, the big, you know, Fortune 500 companies that you work for, that you benefited from. So you're not willing to acknowledge this. And I said, first of all, the whole argument behind that Central Intelligence Agency was based on the lie that Pearl Harbor was a failure to connect the dots. The same thing they used in 9/11. That wasn't what Pearl Harbor was a setup. They knew exactly what was going to happen. So the whole analytical basis or justification for a central intelligence agency is based on a lie. He had no idea that there's even a controversy regarding Pearl Harbor.
You know, military intelligence is shocking to me in how they've been able to pull the wool over the population in regards to it, because it's such an obvious oligarch secret society. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is probably the spearhead tip and on the enslavement of the population. Right, all of these agencies, and yet they've been able to like get like with James Bond movies, and you know,
yes, the cultural thing. Yeah,
yeah, they get this idea that, well, they're actually out for you. I mean, we're really it's like a do you ever, you know, the background of Alan Dulles or Richard Helms?
Yeah.
When MK Ultra was discovered, and Helms said, "Well, I destroyed all the documents because I didn't want to embarrass my friends." Does that sound like a democratically focused organization? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know,
was,
that would be
was that, what was it? What was their law firm again? In Dulles' law firm?
The Harriman Brown.
Brown Brother Harriman was the banking guy.
Yeah, Brown Brother Harriman, which, I told you, I was mentioning last week, it's like, it is Skull and Bones.
Yeah. But, I mean, Dulles Brothers' law firm wasn't representing the interest of the American people.
Right.
It was corporations, these transnational right. corporations.
And the Luciferian secret society. I mean, that's the you know, that's where the funding and the focus is coming from. For God's sakes, I mean, you know, it just kind of the normies, they drive me nuts.
Like OSS, they said it was Oh So Social was the real.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Rich folks.
But I mean, it's like you look at Skull and Bones, and you go, gee, there's all these presidents, and you know, all of this corporate presidents, and you know, central intelligence agencies, and you know, they run the CIA. Well, gee, folks, what do you think they swear oaths to when they join the organization? Wouldn't it, you know, given the power, a good idea to put a little sunlight on this? And because we don't know what goes on inside the secret society, doesn't that mean that we really don't have a clue, not a clue about the actual cultural control of this nation?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, they don't know anything about, like, tradecraft, like sheep dipping.
Yeah.
How the various agencies are infiltrated by the Central Intelligence Agency by posting people there for 10, 20 years. And they're really an asset of the agency. And if you look at someone like... Ed Lansdale was a great example of that. He was officially an Air Force general, but he was always CIA, you know. You know, so that's how it's done. You have to how these intelligence operations agencies operate, but also their origin, the interest they represent. Good example, if you put out cite cases like Guatemala, 1954, or Iran, 1953, where you have the CIA doing the bidding of, you know, whether it's United Fruit Company or the Seven Sisters. This isn't for the benefit of the American people. This isn't national security. It's there to promote the corporate interests. And there's a direct line between, like, Alan Dulles and his brother and Richard Helms and to these corporations that benefit from the various coups that they've sponsored and civil wars that they've sponsored throughout the years. And we see it today in Syria. We got it with WikiLeaks, where they're coveting the Gaddafi's gold hoard. Hillary Clinton.
Well, they punish him, you know, because he wasn't going to play ball with the international debt system. Yeah, and these things are clues. To get a normie to the point where they're paying attention to those kinds of details, that's the trick. But you know, you always want to try to see if you can find, you know, if you're with a normie, what I would suggest is to see if there's some spark in their mind anywhere. You know, try the listing, like, you know, Tim has been giving just terrific examples of things that should open the mind a little bit, you know, make people just a little bit curious. That's really what I try to do. I try to see if I can just find a way to transition them from kind of, if they seem to have like, a little bit of open-mindedness, just to be curious about some of these things.
Well, look at Operation Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
Importing weapons into Mexico. And of course, the official story was, well, we're trying to trace it for a law enforcement operation. But then we lost track of it. So you're shipping guns illegally into Mexico to add to the violence in that area in Mexico, to create more social instability. This feeds the cheap labor mills and the macaderos near the border there, and also feeds migration north, which creates all types of problems and opportunities, political opportunities. And so that type of malevolence is so obvious that they're caught shipping guns into Mexico, giving them to drug gangs that are really assets of the intelligence agencies.
And those are great moments when you can find an easy to understand act of malevolence by the government or by an intelligence agency. These are things that always should be, particularly if they're topical, because they happen so often that you can, it's almost like one a week.
What Gary Webb exposed back in the 90s with with his Dark Alliance book and series with the San Jose Mercury News, and an example of what happened to him in his career for being a good investigative reporter, to me, is evidence of a conspiracy right there. What happens to the reporters actually think they're supposed to report and investigate? And the corporate takeover of the news, how they destroyed investigative news, now everyone just gets their news from Reuters and AP, which are all controlled by a few families. The fact that you had this arms for cocaine ring being operated by Oliver North and George Bush in league with Bill Clinton at MENA, Arkansas, and why we heard so much about Monica Lewinsky, and why the Star Report focused so much on Monica Lewinsky and what they did and didn't do, and what was sex and what is sex and what is and all that stuff, when the big story was this cocaine operation, gun running operation. Guns were being flown down to Nicaragua using the, I think it was the armory in Arkansas at the facilitated by Bill Clinton, and he was rewarded with this money that was being flown back up with Barry Seal and that gang, and a lot of that money went into the Arkansas Development Corporation, which enriched Bill Clinton's cronies in Arkansas. At the same time, it was feeding cocaine into like South Central LA, feeding the crack cocaine epidemic up there, which is advertised on the news. Remember the news? It's cheap. It's powerful. It's crack. Well, that's a commercial.
And it could be yours tonight.
Yeah, and there's a paper trail and everything. That was a CIA operation. Was it Daniello Blandone and Ricky Ross, and all the connections are there. And it's not that complicated, because if you're the Central Intelligence Agency and you have assets in the FAA, or you can land planes at military bases without any inspection, you don't even have to bother with corrupting the customs, because you can get around customs. And it's all national security,
Yeah, that's where we're at now. The government, particularly the intelligence agencies, are basically a law unto themselves. They used to be concerned that they had to at least create a facade that would look good for the Congress, because I suspected at that time, in the 70s, there were still enough Congress people that were actually from the non-secret society group.
Well, but a normie would say, Bill Clinton and George Bush in business with cocaine? No way. They hate each other because they ran against each other.
That's
their worldview,
So that's the I was thinking that one thing that a couple friends of mine actually tried to arrange, but it didn't come off, but I think it's a great idea, is to have a dinner with normies. If you've got like, say, three people that are kind of clear-minded, and are willing to put an evening in, is to invite a normie that they know, and then try to basically see if there is any kind of curiosity that can be created over a dinner. I think it's the responsibility of every red-blooded American clear-minded patriot to have dinner with one normie a week henceforth. So we should, and the thing, our Norman, But the thing is that no toxic food. So you have to be careful with what restaurant you take them to. In fact, I wouldn't take them to a restaurant. That would be the first thing I would do is say, okay, well, here's the food we're going to have. And we're not going to have this and that and put the Budweiser down if that's a carcinogenic, you know. I mean, literally, I would get at that level. It's almost like deprogramming, you know, where you just get that Budweiser out of your hand, you idiot. Don't you know it's in that? You know, here's some rat poison. Drink that. You're better off, you know. So that would be like an idea that might be kind of fun too. And if you can establish it in the normal at a kind of a regular basis, and you know, in fact, that could be kind of fun. You could have a restaurant, you know, called Normies, and you know the people who work there, all the staff would be basically deprogrammers, you know. You'd feed them healthy food, you'd give them real understanding of the world, and you try to create real brotherhood instead of the ludicrous kind of superficial sort of cult of personality that people engage in who have been victimized by, you know, hundreds of hours of pornography watching and then, you know, backed up by, you know, like looking at the Kardashians on TV or something. I mean, most Americans' minds are so shot, right, that there's just very little humanity or kind of, you know, reason that's left inside them. And so they really need to be jolted, you know, to get most people, because I just, you know, if you're in the level where, you know, the NFL is really fascinating and we got to spend time every Sunday watching this and drinking the glyphosate beer, I mean, they just don't have a chance, you know. So yeah. So this is one thought. Tim and I are available. If some of you want to get a crowdfunding, we would be maitre d's you could start one where you live and I could have one here. We could set up the Normies and then just see how far we can take it. Because we need some kind of cultural center, some kind of visible symbol that people can see that, you know, they know it's okay to talk about 911. It's okay to talk about bringing back ethnic Catholic and European communities, right? There's some place where the political correctness is not permitted, right? That there is just a zone where the victimized normie is not permitted to be comfortable with his or her victimization, right? Where they've been made brain dead, made to hate themselves, made to be physically ill, and then made to, you know, to be afraid to complain, right? So this is what, I don't know if it'd be a restaurant or what, but I think a restaurant would be a good thought, because you get at the food angle too.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I look at I was having a discussion not too long ago about Tavistock. And if you just look at the history of Tavistock and what its function is, we know it exists. It's not a conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Same thing with the Rand Corporation is that they're gathering up all this information, all this data. They're sucking up all this data and examining it, filing it away, whatever they do with it. They're not going to go through that much effort to gather information without using it to some extent to manipulate us, whether it's through marketing, psychological warfare. We do know that the Pentagon has invested billions and billions of dollars in psychological warfare. They produce a psychological warfare manual. The target of that psychological warfare isn't the enemy, it's the American people. The American people are the enemy because they're the most important people to manipulate, because they have to be buffaloed and fooled and terrorized all the time. So we know all this. So, to me, just the fact that these things exist suggests that's proof of there's well-organized malevolence targeting you, and that's conspiracy. That is indeed a conspiracy. Social engineering requires, at some level, a conspiracy, because you're manipulating people. You're engaged, more or less, you're two or more people meeting in secret to engage in some immoral or illegal activity. That's all a conspiracy is. But we all the evidence, you know, particularly in the 20th century, whether it's under the guise of civil rights, integration, the destruction of the ethnic neighborhoods, the creation of suburbia, the construction of the interstate highway system, the creation of the consumer society, and this goes towards getting people in debt, the weakening of families, the hypersexualization of American society targeting the children, and there are other documents to prove that government agencies and the foundations have worked together to over-sexualize children in order to promote things, sexual confusion and degenerate behavior, because that's how you weaken families. That's how you isolate people. These things written, whether it's the Jaffe memo, the Burleson memo, Planned Parenthood's role in all this. You have the AIDS scare that was stirred up in the 80s under this HIV hypothesis, which was, of course, never proven. That was there to justify, largely not just to pull off the shelf and sell poisonous AZT to sick men, but also to and kill them, but also to justify sex ed programs that would produce very graphic sex ed programs under the rubric of AIDS education. You know, these things would otherwise be opposed, but you scare people with this idea of an AIDS virus out there that can get you, you know, one time. And then these children better be educated properly. And it was done to fundamentally change the children's sexual values and morals. And that was that's on paper. That was the purpose of the program.
Yeah, the AIDS education was just the introduction to pornography.
Yeah.
And notice that the whole idea that, you know, AIDS, this horrible virus that was out there stalking us, it never got into the heterosexual population.
No, it was stuck in a certain segment of the homosexual population, drug users, even prostitutes that didn't use drugs didn't get AIDS. Prostitutes that used drugs got AIDS because AIDS is a syndrome. It's a condition weakened immune system. Yeah.
I mean, it's like if you're using poppers. And having, you know, like, I mean, I was looking at the statistics. I'm not exaggerating. The statistic that I saw was a study that was broken into two groups that they studied in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And the groups were the men that had less than 200 sex partners a year in the gay bathhouses, mm-hmm. and those that had more. So the dividing line was 200 sex partners.
What a prude.
So, right. And exactly. Sexually repressed. Need some Freudian therapy to become more liberated. So that was the, that culture had been led to a place where it was self-destructive. And then the AIDS thing was just sort of the cherry on the deranged sundae. And then a lot of people, you know, then got really, really sick and died because they were giving them all these crazy drugs.
Yeah, the pharmaceuticals kicked in, and they really did them in.
Yeah.
If you look at the history, is what happens is, you know, the same families that controlled the banking, that controlled medicine, were involved in drug trafficking for a better part of a century.
It was East Trading Company, which was selling, addicting, you know, all of the poor coolies and all the Chinese, right? This was the entity that became the American banking establishment.
Yes.
I mean, there's a few individuals that may, you know, drifted in or out. But I'm telling you, if you actually trace all the families back, it's the East Trading Company. It's completely Masonic and Jewish, right? Mm-hmm. You've got, you know, like when the Chinese rebelled, the British got the gunboats and they put them under the control of Lord Palmerston, mm-hmm. who was the head Pumbaa Freemason of the Orient. You know, he had these like outfits that made him look like a pharaoh or something. I mean, it's just absurd. So this is what we ended up with.
And they opened up HSBC.
Yeah.
A huge bank. HSBC, which...
Yeah. So they can fund all of their drug money. But, you know, the thing is that I was getting back to Tavistock. It's an important thing to know. I mean, first of all, it's a revolving door for MKUltra, right? You've got psychologists on both sides that go back and forth. It's just a cesspool of experimentation and research that, you know, should be illegal. It started out. Do you know how Tavistock started out, Tim?
It was studying shell shock victims.
It started out, but it actually started out as the Child Guidance Clinic under the Jewish World Health Organization.
Interesting.
That was the actual beginning of Tavistock. That organization, the Child Guidance, God help me, I would not put my kid in there to be guided.
So it has Talmudic origins, I guess?
That was the start of Tavistock. And why Tavistock should be known is because of the Grateful Dead.
Yes.
The Grateful Dead, very important. Because if you look at the dead, which is this, you know, like sick, deranged, LSD promoting and giving out millions of tabs of LSD to children, those people should just be tried immediately. That whole sick collection of purported musicians.
But Joe, there's now a Broadway play using Jerry Garcia's music, from what I understand.
Yeah. Boy, that's just really going to help us a lot, be an upstanding culture. Anyway, so, you know, you've got nothing but employees of MKUltra, people like Robert Hunter, people in the Army with top secret clearance like Jerry Garcia. You've got a whole bunch of a couple guys in Bohemian Groves, a couple guys in who are Freemasons. And if you look at the posters of the warlocks at the acid tests, which were the beginning of the deranged counterculture, which were completely a government op, right? All this LSD they're giving out at these acid tests, I don't think there's a lot of contestation, but, you know, anyone curious, please let me know. I'll help them walk through the analysis of all that. Anyway, when there was a traffic accident, I think it was 1960, maybe 61, and it was right outside the MKUltra hospital, right? And in the car, you had Hunter, Jerry Garcia, and Eric Trist. Who is Eric Trist? Well, his dad is the founder of the government-controlled Tavistock, Alan Trist, Eric Trist, and Alan's father and son. So, see, that collection...
Just a coincidence.
It's like dropping an Erector set on the ground and saying, well, it accidentally created a computer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just can't be circumstance. The average person can see it. And so when you get into, you know, looking at Tavistock as part of our, you know, the control that these people have, I think it's a good way because, you know, with normies, you have this, you know, at least they know about, I mean, all normies would at least just more or less would know what the Grateful Dead are. And if you can easily, and if you can show them that, hey, wait a second, this is really not what you think it is, then maybe some curiosity can come up. Because if you bring up some of the elements that you brought up, every one of them is important and good and should be understood. But a lot of people will just not know what they are because they don't have backgrounds, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's why, you know, food, Grateful Dead. I mean, you know, well, what else, Tim? What can we get at these guys with?
Yeah, I was back to the AIDS thing, though. I was listening to Dr. Nancy Banks talk earlier this week in an old interview she was talking about. She's just giving history of that. What happened was really a post-World War II phenomenon, because before World War II, these families and the drug gangs didn't import much drugs into the United States. Yeah, you had the jazz scene in the 20s, and that did a lot to promote heroin, but it didn't really spread. This had to do probably because the country didn't have the communication or transportation network available that to allow the cancer to spread, so they capitalized on that. But it was after World War II that a decision was taken to start importing opium into the country and really spread heroin. It was the Cold War, particularly Korea, but particularly Vietnam, I guess, when they really started pouring drugs into the country. Of course, this certainly does coincide with MKUltra's Subproject 58 and the Life magazine in the 50s promoting the psychedelic culture. You have the 60s, of course, the promotion of the drug scene through the music, the Laurel Canyon scene, which also has curious connections, all those bands, to military and intelligence. But so you had all this drugs being poured into the country, coupled with this sort of the cultural agenda of feminism, free love, the 60s, the war itself created so many divisions within American society. It could have sort of destroyed the continuity that exists between the generations. So you had the generation gap that was created. You also had the war between the sexes that was created. So all this created a milieu, if you will, well, where drugs should come in and really infect the country. And it kind of came, I guess the chickens came home to roost in the late 70s and 80s, because You'd put certain groups like the you say the ghetto gay culture, which was very promiscuous, and with that a lot of drug use, a fast track lifestyle. They simply wore themselves out, and they had this syndrome, this condition of a suppressed immune system. And it was, and the whole AIDS thing with the HIV virus thing was created to sell that AIDS test, and to sell the AIDS. Gallo did this. Gallo, Dr. Gallo, he the same man who developed the AIDS test also patented it, so he made a lot of money off it. At the same time, AZT, which was actually being promoted by a by Matilda Krim, who was a Jewish spy that was sleeping with LBJ. Who helped cover up the USS Liberty? But she was promoting AZT back in the 80s. Her foundation to treat AIDS patients. So it really gets interesting. But the whole point is that again, it was had nothing to do with this particular virus, and I see no evidence for it that it does. And if you look at it now, if you're just looking back at it, 20, 30 years, how can it, how can you blame a simple virus for this when it's only affecting this group? Another thing is the AIDS test itself that Gallo created. A positive test is positive in the United States, but negative in Canada. And it's different than what it is in Africa. And the antibodies test, if you're pregnant, if you're a woman, because you're having an immune reaction to the pregnancy, you can come up positive.
Right.
That's just a layman's understanding of it. I like to, if I'm wrong, and I want someone to correct me if I'm wrong in this, but that's my understanding of it. And the fact that they've never isolated the virus. What?
No. And they never will. I mean,
it was a big scam. But my point is, I point that out, and I get eyes like I'm crazy. What are you talking about? AIDS is a virus, blah, 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 because that's what's been said. Never been proven. But again, just point that out. That's an official story, which has so many holes in it, but yet it's thrown out there. It's talked about. People still reference, the fear of HIV, how it can spread, and all these things. It's one of these foundational things you often hear when you're talking about other things. People often bring it up. It's kind of like the Holocaust or something. The Holocaust narrative. People bring it up. The Nazis and these things, where all of a sudden you realize they're referring to something which may not be exactly what we think it is. So you may not want to base your argument on that, because there's some problems with that foundation. It's not as firm as you may think it is.
Exactly. I mean, I think that you have potentially a virus. I mean, how can you disprove that?
Yeah.
But certainly there are so many other elements that are in play. The idea that there's some causality between the virus and the mortality. Good luck demonstrating that.
Yeah, someone told me the difference between Arthur Ashe and what's that basketball player?
Magic Johnson.
Magic Johnson is Magic Johnson stopped taking AZT. Arthur Ashe didn't.
Yeah. Well, I would see again. You don't have any experimentation or any kind of clarity. You just know that it was supposed to be. Spreadable into the heterosexual community, and then it never made it. And there's no explanation. And so the idea that the virus just isn't really what they told us makes a lot of sense. Medicine is, this is something that normies would never get, but medicine is just, in my opinion, is just basically part of mind control. I mean, when the Rockefellers basically took over medicine and developed the pharmaceutical industry. Mm-hmm. They had to change the whole memory of what health was. It was like you're talking about how they, with autism, they're kind of, changing our collective code of understanding of health.
Yes.
Right? It now includes autism. There's nothing wrong with it.
Had to go 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 150 nationwide.
Right. And, my data I have right now is 1 in 49.
I mean, it's that's just like, I mean, and they say, it's just diagnostics. Really?
Right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Diagnostic. I have, it's a catastrophe. Now there's an epidemic. And so they're changing the kind of understanding of health. They're saying, well, look, they're fine. They're just, it's a kind of neurologic diversity. The problem is you with these, narrow, kind of biased and bigoted perspective on neurology.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of room for in our multicultural and welcoming community for all the autistic, you know, kids, and there's plenty of stuff for them to do, and they can be just fine, right? And so this is kind of just like how multiculturalism was sold, feminism was sold. I mean, they can, by putting out the meme that this is diversity, then jackhammer, you know, the minds of everyone into realizing that, oh, gee, it's just fine. There's no problem.
I mean, look at I was going over health benefits, so-called. Just the other day with my wife, and just over the cost, I'm just exasperated because it's so expensive now. We don't use doctors. We're healthy. But you can't get a catastrophic cover. You can't get a catastrophic plan anymore because they mandate coverage. So everyone's, it's such an obvious scam. And also at the same time, people obviously think they think the normal condition is to be always sick. Always needing a physician, always needing to got to be poked, prodded,
needing
poisoned.
Chemicals, right?
Need chemicals, everything. Because you can get sick, and one day you can get sick, and because at the same time they're poisoning us with food that's robbed of any nutrients because of the industrialized farming methods. Gives us cheap food, may not nourish us, but it's cheap. At the same time that they're promoting all this vaccinations, drugs. Pediatrician care, well visits, these things. You're well, but you better go because you may not be well. all the co-pays. It's a big insurance scam, but people just adjust to it. People, I need health insurance.
Here's an example of why I can't be invited to parties. I was at a social gathering. There was a doctor, and we actually, and this was like a couple weeks ago. And by the end of the conversation, I told him that, you're basically both a disgrace and a violator of the Hippocratic Oath, and you're basically killing people. And that the idea that you're making money on it makes you worse than a pimp. So, and he was sort of shocked, and I said, look, I don't want to be friendly, obviously. I said, this is me being friendly. Don't get me angry. Because he was saying, you're an angry person. I said, no, no. Oh, no. Oh, you haven't even started to see me angry, my friend. You got me angry, you'll see some anger. Because this is the good side of me.
Yeah, people listen to it pointed talk with anger. No, 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 no.
It's not. I'm just observing the world, and I'm observing, he was talking about the advantages of radiation and in chemotherapy. He was an oncologist, and I just knew a little bit about this. And of course, when you scratch the surface of these guys, you find that they really don't know anything. They've been trained in a few things, but if you go into any kind of, work studies and things, and he was just a hot air balloon. And that's when I let into him, because he's not even trying. He's just there to collect money and dispense the drugs and then go home and take opioids,
Yeah.
So it's a sick, sick world. And the sickness is not in your immune system. The immune system is what is good about it. Promote it, and don't let them give you chemicals to try to take the place of the immune system. I've said this before, everyone, I am not a doctor, but I will dispense my opinion, which is that you couldn't give me any chemicals. I don't give a damn what they say. They just go to hell. They can take all of their vaccines and chemo and, all of these drugs with the side effects that are like, five pages long. Just go to hell with all that crap. I don't want a single one of those things in my body.
Well,
not one.
Again, I think you said it a week or two ago, that the problem with these things are health issues. We're dealing with, in a very toxic environment, and it's multi-factor. And the problem is to address these things requires a fundamental reevaluation of our priorities and how we live, the whole industrial thing. And a century ago, a bunch of oligarchs decided they were making a bunch of waste products. They couldn't do anything, so they decided to dump it in the environment and call it additive, like fluoride in water. Chemical fertilizers, these things, as opposed to, soil that is enriched with minerals that you can grow things in. Those minerals get into the food and we eat them. And well, they produce cheap food. Only problem is the cheap food isn't good for us. We'd be better off spending more on food and less on electronic gadgetries, you know. And we have to, and maybe we could understand, if we understood the risk involved, we could calculate our choices better. But we're not. We're giving bad information. We're not telling. We're not being told that the toxic foods, the you know, the processed foods are killing us.
That's right.
It's something else. It's a disease. It's
the
a virus.
Toxic food, you know? They're killing us, and then the toxic culture is destroying our soul.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, you turn on the TV, now they have these apps where you can watch, you know, the Cleveland brain concussions fighting against the Philadelphia fornicators 24/7, you know, every NFL game. You don't miss one.
Yeah, the NFL Network. And I've noticed I just watch the NFL channel. I go to the gym and they have the NFL channel.
It is the stupidest, it is the saddest thing imaginable. And people actually talk about it. You'll be, you know, like where I exercise, I give an exercise, people are talking about, gee, Joe, what do you think about the, you know, the brain concussions against, you know, the fornicators, you know? And it's like, I just go, you know, it's just so sad that your minds never develop past like the age of 3 years old, you know? It is the stupidest thing imaginable that with that you'd be paying attention to this. And, you know, they train kids now because football was just done for training people for violence, basically to prepare people for world wars, mm-hmm. right? It's Skull and Bones. It's the Skull and Bones Project. That's what the NFL is. It's just Amos Stagg. What's the other clown? They're just these Skull and Bones guys that wanted to get people to obey, you know, to have violence on command. And so, you know, you just have to, like, cut it off. Cut off something that stupid. And, you know, I mean, what do you replace it with? Well, try to have an understanding of history. Studying history is more fun than watching the Cleveland brain concussions.
Yeah.
Fight against, you see, get into that. Show that to your children on Sunday.
And you don't have to worry,
the poor the fathers that go into these little rooms, these man caves, and watch this stuff. It's just the most tragic thing imaginable.
Yeah.
Get the hell out of there. Get out of there immediately. You know, all you're going to do there is have the soul sucked right out of you. So that's what you say to normies. Your soul will get sucked right out of you, buddy, if you keep this up. And it does, you know.
Yeah.
You gotta, it does.
The TV, the entertainment, these things, the food, it's...
It's all one big lump of vampire soul suck. And it's hard to be a real person with real, you know, kind of lively, honest interests in the world and in family and all these things. And, you know, and it's difficult because the social life, you know, it's like... it's hard to find couples, you know, to find a mate in this world, because if you're like a clear-minded person, where do you find that other individual?
Yeah, it's tough. How do you hand yourself on a first date? I mean,
exactly.
I got married before 9/11, so
so did I.
Yeah. So there's a comedy group called Joy Camp. Joy Camp.
Oh, Joy Camp. I know them. Yeah.
And they had a thing with this guy dating. He's a truther on a date. And he's in there. The segment starts him hearing back to the left, back to the left, back to the left. He's talking about the Kennedy assassination.
The JFK line. Yeah.
And it's just, oh, come on. Just talking about these various conspiracy theories. You see this, like, this 20-something girl kind of going through it all, rolling her eyes and all that stuff, and since she excuses herself to go to the ladies' room, and then time goes by, she doesn't come back, and he's, you know, he's left there alone because all he can talk about are these things, and she completely alienates the young lady. That's a real dilemma, though, I guess you could say.
Because
how would you? I mean,
well, but Jim, this is a problem we're going to solve because at Normies, we're going to have also the Tim and Joe dating service.
Yeah.
You know, where we're going to we're going to organize on a, you know, like couples on levels of sort of understanding so that the dates can function, you know, normally, but also they can be some progression of soul development. And no pornography.
Yeah. Right? Well, I think the important point here is that although it looks grim and these are some grim topics, is to still maintain some balance and sense of humor about it, about life in general.
Yes, that is sort of important, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, I was thinking we could, like, we could give, like, certifications so that women, you know that they're getting dates when, as our, in our dating service, where the men have been certified free of pornography for 2 months.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a good screening technique.
We have like a little seal of like Tim Joe approval that this is like a 60-day non-pornographic and 911 clear-minded individual. He's certified. So
I was looking at it was like a Catholic girls website, adults, and I was just reading some of the comments on it, and they were lamenting. These single girls were lamenting the dating scene and the type of men they're running into and how they led their own lives. And I'm thinking, as I'm reading through all the comments, none of them are aware of the role of the think tanks and intelligence agencies involved in destroying the ethnic neighborhoods, the Catholic neighborhoods that destroyed their communities. And they themselves don't really identify with a particular community anymore. They're just Catholic. But they don't belong to a parish. They don't have that support system or networks. They don't have that familiarity that you would come with a community, so you'd have better matches.
They don't have a culture from which relationships spring.
Yeah.
You know, and this was all taken away. They don't recognize that their loneliness and their kind of inability to connect is the goal of the culture that has been created around them.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was, it was malevolently constructed by people who have a psychological understanding and cultural understanding, and now they are the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have, you know, the future is kind of a weird job and single motherhood and a basically a shattered existence because they've come from a shattered culture.
Yeah, you have to... If you want to understand where are all the good men anymore, and if you're a young lady out there, you have to know about the authoritarian personality and the Frankfurt School. You have to know about the Blanchard brothers.
Yes.
You have to learn about the University of Chicago and the role that Gunnar Myrdal played in the American Dilemma and the whole thing. But the problem is, again, that gets at the normie question, because you start deconstructing the civil rights movement and the true agenda behind that, you're accused of being a racist.
Yeah, and you've got to understand how words have been basically put into your mind for the purpose of impeding thought so that you don't recognize a secret society activity.
Mm-hmm.
All of these buzzwords, these loaded words, integration, feminism, racism, anti-Semitism, I mean, this is just a lump of propaganda that has been an incredibly successful. This is the Frankfurt School victory.
And the emphasis today on Confederate memorials and slavery is to distract you from the fact that you are now currently enslaved.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. And about to be genocided. I mean, so there it is. The normies need a good talking to. I think we've given some ways and ideas on how and when to talk to them. We'll develop more as we go along, but Tim, this is one of these things that we could talk, I think, for the rest of the night about this. Maybe we should do another show on it.
Yeah,
it's just so important, but there's so much to say that it's hard really to say at all.
So, okay, well, Joe, I'm gonna let you go.
Tim, thank you so very much. Can't wait for next week.
Yeah, enjoy the week, and we'll talk again.
Okay, brother. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.